The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Manchester City are safely through to the FA Cup quarter-final after a 3-1 victory over Plymouth in the first meeting of the two sides for more than 30 years. The Pilgrims are the fifth new team to come to the Etihad for the first time this season after Ipswich, Inter, Sparta Prague and Salford City. And it might have got a bit nervy but for Nico O'Reilly's brace either side of half-time. City now have a midweek off. Get used to that this season, and that means preparations can be a bit more extensive than usual for a tricky game at Nottingham Forest. Journalist and Forest fan Nick Miller will be on the show later to explain why they've done so well this season. Something else to get used to is that a midweek off means we here at the Blue Moon Podcast can do some very important work diving into City nostalgia. This week was 35 years since the famous Andy Dibble and Gary Crosby incidents at Forest, so we'll look into that. If you're too young to remember it, brace yourselves for one of the worst moments of cheating ever seen on a football pitch. Lots to get stuck into then. I'm David Mooney. I am joined by journalist at BBC Sport, Alex Brotherton.
Hello.
And from One Football, we've got Dan Burke.
Hello, David. How's it going?
Not bad, thanks. Not bad. Alex, you good?
Yeah, sorry. I feel a bit rude now, not asking how you were.
Yeah, I mean, you should do. It's. I'm greatly offended.
Not been on a podcast for a bit. I'm forgetting my podcast etiquette. How are you doing, David?
And I am
how
very are you good, done? Thank you. I am good.
I'm magnificent. I've enjoyed the free midweek. I've had a very football-free week so far, so it's been
fantastic. What did you do with your midweek?
Just been watching other stuff on telly, getting into Severance, getting into The White Lotus. Way more entertaining.
Mm. Definitely. I was at Laura Marling last night, which is, if you've never seen her live, she's fantastic. But you might not see her live for a while because she just said she's pregnant and not going to be doing many more live shows. So, yeah, it's funny. When you have a midweek off, you can actually relax and do some other things, isn't it? You're not stressed about another game. I also saw this week, this is an idea nicked entirely from another podcast, so sorry about that, but I saw the Rest is Entertainment were debating whether Stephen Hendry was cool or not, off the back of a discussion around who the coolest celebrity is. So, in a not-so-subtle grab, who's City's coolest ever player? Dan, you strike me as a man who knows who's cool.
Do I?
Yeah.
That's good to know. Well, the answer is easy for me. It's Mario Balotelli, by an absolute mile, I would say. I mean, scoring the goal with his shoulder against Norwich for a start was probably the coolest goal that's ever been scored, I think. There was, you know, all the stories about him. That kind of period of like Mario Mania was just like magnificent, wasn't it? All the kind of urban myths about him driving around, giving money to homeless people dressed as Father Christmas. And, you know, there was some stories going around about Jack Grealish this week being in pubs and paying for people's bar bill and stuff like that, wasn't there? Mario Balotelli started all that when he was in Withenshaw on Christmas Day that time, hey, I remember. So
Alfie Haaland started that by paying for petrol, mate.
I suppose so, yeah. So yeah, obviously Balotelli wasn't without his foibles, but the whole Why Always Me t-shirt, the goal that he scored in that derby, well, both goals really, yeah, I think he's streaks ahead of anyone else in City history as the coolest player and possibly football history.
Does he get your vote, Alex? Because all I'm thinking of is that picture of Balotelli surrounded by United players at Wembley, where he's just like arms out, like I am the most relaxed I've ever been. United players going mad. That's a cool. That's coolness personified, isn't it? So is there anybody that can come close to it?
Yeah, I don't think you can get cooler than Mario, really. I mean, I took a slightly different approach to this question and just thought about. Back to sort of my younger self watching when I was sort of getting into City and just sort of I was trying to think of players that, you know, looked a bit different, not what you'd expect kind of for a professional player to sort of how to act or look, and I kind of came on to Georgi Tsamaras, which is a bit of a left field one, I feel, but just how that his appearance, like I'd never seen a footballer with, like, you know, like hair like that.
Rockstar hair.
Yeah, just the way he sort of moved, and he was very sort of languid, and okay, yeah, his record wasn't the best, but you know, but just the way he would sort of every now and again, you know, he'd pop up with a goal, and just the way he played, it was maybe cool isn't the right word, but it's quite hard when you've got such a cool guy like Mario Balotelli. Everyone else is just a bit lame in comparison, aren't they? So,
yeah, I'm glad you said Balotelli there, Dan, because I was I wrote the question, thought glad I don't have to answer that. I've not got one.
Well, do you know, when I was younger, I used to think Joey Barton was the epitome of cool because he was like into indie music and had like an indie haircut and all this kind of stuff. And
can I take back what I said before about you being a man of a good judge of a cool character?
Well, you know, time makes fools of us all, doesn't it, really? Especially Joey Barton, it seems. Yeah. One player who was definitely not cool, I think, an incident that I personally witnessed was I used to go and get players' autographs outside Main Road, you know, when they'd get out of the cars and you could just go right up to the cars. I remember once Ile Berkovich pulling into the car park in his Range Rover, blacked-out Range Rover, thinking he was cool as fuck, and he was absolutely blasting Cisco Thong Song at the stereo. He thought he was so cool that he got out of the car and was like, had his sunglasses on and stuff. And I was like, mate, you're not cool.
Yeah, there we are. If you can think of anybody who we've missed that is cool, get in touch at Blue Moon Podcast on the socials, and you can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. Better get into the week, though, because we're going to start with the Plymouth game. And Alex, this is an interesting one, because the pattern of the game and the way it went, you could look at the 3-1 scoreline and say it's quite comfortable, and you can get all the kind of fans feeling in the stadium that maybe there was some anxiety there. But I'm wondering if that's just because Plymouth took the lead, you know, because City seemed to be in control of that game throughout, and the going in front was quite late in the day, but ultimately it was never really in doubt, was it?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's good reason for that feeling, perhaps with that, you know, that anxiety in the stadium, because it was, you know, the 19th, I think it was the 19th game this season, City have conceded first, which is now tied with Guardiola's first season, so it's like the worst under him. So it's,
goodness me, I didn't realise that, yeah.
Yeah, it's something that they're still struggling with, even though, you know, I think we can all agree that performances have been, by and large, you know, better over the last couple of months than, you know, that seven-game winless run in November.
Just looking at the fixtures as well between now and the end of the season, they're going to break that record, aren't they?
I think it was, you know, I've watched the game back again, and it was like, yeah, City were dominant. Like, you can't get much more dominant than that. You know, 29 shots on goal to Plymouth's 1, 73% possession, you know, did pretty much every metric in terms of, like, how much of the game was spent in Plymouth's half and how many attempts City had, and big chances. City had 10 big chances, like what Opta defines as a big chance. Plymouth had none, and they still scored a goal. So,
scream,
you know,
City, that though, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was City, you know, it was, I think it was one of them where it was just a case of, you know, putting Plymouth under constant pressure, and at the end, and, you know, eventually it was going to pay dividends and they were going to crack, and that's exactly what happened. So I think it was a pretty decent performance. You know, there was a lot of changes to the team, and, you know, this is a thing that rival fans always sort of, a stick that they used to beat City with. It's like all that expensive talent on the bench, not playing week in, week out, and you're still putting in these performances. But everyone really knows, no matter what level of the game you're at, how much your players cost. If you make, you know, 4, 5, 6 changes between games, you're going to lose that fluidity and, you know, consistency. No group of players, however good or expensive they are, can just suddenly turn it on if they're not that used to playing with each other. So I thought, given that, you know, given that, you know, Plymouth, obviously a really hard-working, dedicated team that maybe not for all of this season, but they showed that against Liverpool in the previous round. Considering that, I thought City, you know, did everything they could, really, and yeah, they got the 3 goals, which in the end were enough. They could have, on another day, you know, maybe a few seasons ago, they would have scored 9 or 10, because they had so many good clear chances and some good saves, to be fair, from the keeper, Hazard. But yeah, I thought it was a good performance.
Yeah, who do Plymouth think they are, Dan? Liverpool getting battered for 90 minutes, but still trying to win.
Oh, don't get me started on them. I didn't know about the stat about Plymouth hadn't conceded a goal in the FA Cup before we scored against them. So they kept a clean sheet against Liverpool and Brentford, I believe, in the previous rounds, which is impressive. And you look at the way they played, I mean, I think they deserve a lot of credit, and you kind of wonder, how the hell are you fighting relegation in the Championship? I think Wayne Rooney's probably got a lot to answer for there. But and also,
well, just in general, right? Not just at Plymouth, yeah.
It's a different assignment, isn't it, being the underdog and going into games and sort of setting up deep and defending like they did. But I think they did it well, and they made City really work for it. And yeah, you kind of expect the opposition to just take the lead in these games now, don't you? Score with the first chance. When we played Spurs last week, I remember they had a sort of attack after 2 or 3 minutes, and you're thinking, here we go, they're going to score. Like, yeah. You know, you just, it's sort of just become a feature of the season now. But yeah, City got through the game. You know, the control of the game, like you said, I think with it was 11 changes Pep made, so I think there's always going to be a bit of disjointedness there. But I think they got through it. I think we saw some good performances from some of the younger lads and some of the more experienced players. And yeah, it's a good win. Puts us in the next round. It's a game I expect us to win. I thought going in, maybe we'd win sort of 4 or 5 nil. Obviously, it wasn't quite that straightforward on the day, but yeah, we were well worth the victory.
Yeah, should talk Nico O'Reilly to start with, because he's the main kind of headline from the game. 2 goals from left back, 3 FA Cup goals this season. You can't really ask more from that, Dan, from a player that is really on the fringe. He's a youth team player who isn't going to get many opportunities. He's taking them, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a proper player, I think. It's interesting that he's been used at left back, and you kind of think, what other chances are you going to get to play? You know, is he going to play against Bournemouth in the next round? I would be surprised. I think we'll probably sort of go pretty much full strength for that, really. There was talk in the summer, even before Rodri got injured, about using O'Reilly as a defensive midfielder. As far as I can remember, that hasn't happened once, apart from in the Community Shield when he did okay. But and you
Spurs,
kind of think
did Spurs in the cup? Did he do it there? Maybe?
Possibly, actually, yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of think with the problems we've had this season with Gundogan and Kovacic struggling in that role, like, was it not worth giving him a chance at some point just to see what he could do? What's the worst that could have happened? Obviously, with the other Nico coming in now, then it's going to really limit his options, his opportunities to play there. And you wonder what his kind of immediate future and long-term future at the club looks like. But what's not in doubt is that he's a fantastic player. He's really talented, quite a mature player for his age, I think, as well. Carries himself well and took his goals well here. Three goals this season now. I think he's made a good contribution, and I'd like to see a bit more from him, perhaps in the... Well, I was going to say the later stage of the season when the league games might not be that relevant, but we don't know about that, do
don't
we?
Know about that,
they
do we?
They yeah. probably will be relevant going right into the final day.
Yeah. I mean, what have you made of his impact this season, Alex? Because, as Dan says, given the team's problems overall, maybe he could have been used a little bit more, but obviously he does have not very experienced at all. The times that he's been on the pitch, he's really been good value for it.
Yeah, I think he's made a good impact. I think you could probably argue he's the sort of the fringe player, I guess, young player that's sort of, you know, taken their chance the most. There's always lots of shouts, and this isn't, you know, just to use a comparison, James McAtee, you know, City supporters are always calling for him to get more minutes, especially this season. And I think, you know, he'd probably admit that he perhaps hasn't always taken the chance that, you know, supporters would like him to. Whereas Nico O'Reilly, as you say, has been quite impressive. And I think what's impressed me the most is actually was just looking into his to the appearances he's made this season. And of the 6 starts that he's made in all competitions, he started those games in 5 different positions. So his last 3 appearances for City have been at left back, but 2 of those were for the bench. But in 5 of, I think, yeah, he started other games at centre back. He's started in midfield, attacking midfield, defensive midfield, and then yeah, against Plymouth, he started at left back. So I think his versatility is something clearly that Guardiola is really liking, and not just, you know, he's someone that can fill in here, but you know, here and there, but you know, actually do a good job, play well.
Yeah, does it say anything about him, though, as well, that when you think about Guardiola as a manager, he's very safe. Like, he doesn't like to take risks at all. And you look at all those positions you've just listed off there, like, they're all defensive positions. They're all positions where if he makes a mistake, he's probably going to give away a goal-scoring chance.
Yeah, even when he's played, you know, further forward, it tends to be centrally. So, as you say, it's like, you know, if you midfield and you make a mistake, that's like one of the worst areas. You know, you can concede the ball. It's going to lead to transitions. So, yeah, I think he clearly does trust O'Reilly. You know, he's always been very careful with young players, hasn't he, Pep, about chucking them in. Penny for Kusunov's thoughts against Chelsea. But usually he's quite careful, you know. So you know, it's not a surprise that he wasn't playing, you know, against Real Madrid and you know, the big games. But, you know, he's trusted to come into, you know, the FA Cup is you know, it's City's main chance of winning silverware. Well, pretty much only chance of winning silverware now. So it is a big game. It's one of the rest of City's league, so FA Cup games this season are really important. So he clearly trusts him, and yeah, he's taken his chance, and he's looked impressive. And then especially to have a left back as well, where, you know, maybe that's where he'll tend to play in the future. Who knows? Depends what City do in the summer market. But to have a left back that's actually a bit more of a physical build than perhaps we're used to seeing for players in that position. And obviously Vardiol has played there, but O'Reilly sort of, you know, he has that aerial ability as well, like Vardiol does. Perhaps he's a bit more experienced playing in the advanced positions than Vardiol. So it's a nice, perhaps, you know, Vardiol has that good goal-scoring ability this season, but it's a nice sort of change for Guardiola to have, I feel.
Yeah. Dan, Alex mentioned the aerial ability there as well, and that's something that City do lack, I feel, in a weird way, where even you take players like Diaz and Stones and Ake when they're available, and they've not been available often this season, in fairness, but when you think of City having set pieces, they don't feel very good at attacking them. Like, no. Diaz is great at getting the ball clear when he's under pressure at the back, but flip that round the other way, he doesn't seem to be very good at getting his head on it to get it in the net at the other end. And if you've got a player like O'Reilly who can do that, and he's a big, tall, strong lad, then that's another bonus.
Yeah, Diaz hasn't scored for ages, has he, I don't think. No. It's been a couple of years since he last got a goal. And Ake in the game against Plymouth, actually, there was a few opportunities from corners where I thought he should have done a bit better with him. I think there was one where I just shouted, just head it in the nets, like, come on, like, what's the problem here? And then Nico showed him how it was done, thankfully. Yeah, so they are, I think Guardiola highlighted this, they are a short team, aren't they, generally speaking? They don't have an awful lot of height. So that's another thing that Nico brings to the table, definitely. And I think the second goal in particular was a really good header. There was a bit of maybe talk about it being a bit of a foul, maybe. I thought he just used his body well there.
Good strength, isn't it? Yeah.
Got his head to it. So, yeah, I think it was it's great to see him contributing with goals, yeah.
Yeah. Just on the other players that are kind of inexperienced or new in there, Dan, as well. Vitor Reich, I've settled on Reich, but I don't know if that's if that's what the consensus is going to be. We'll find out when he does that Premier League video where he announces, yeah, where he says his name at the start of the season. He seemed pretty comfortable in the second half. What did you make of him? Because he was one that had a chance from a corner as well.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I've been impressed with him. I mean, I liked the look of him against Leighton Orient. He only played the first half of that game, didn't he? But I thought he did pretty well in a challenging game where they were sort of, you know, that's a proper like English game to come into, that, isn't it? It must have been a real culture shock for him with them just sort of knocking it into the channels and the wind blowing and the rain coming down and stuff. And I thought he dealt with it pretty well. And I asked just before we signed him, one of the Brazilian lads that I work with, what he was like. And they basically said, he's a proper City player. He's good on the ball, very intelligent player, you know, for his age and stuff. But they said he's too skinny for the Premier League at the moment.
Yeah, he's like a 2D cartoon, isn't he? It's, yeah, like if he turns side on, it's like he'll disappear.
Yeah, exactly. So he needs to get in the gym a bit over the summer, I think, and bulk up and get used to that kind of physical challenge a little bit. And I think the fact that they didn't register him for the Champions League shows where he is in the pecking order at the moment. But with Stones and Akanji and now Ake out for most of, if not the rest of the season, then there's an opportunity for him there, I think. And obviously Kusunov will play a lot more now. And I think Heiss, I'm going to call him that. Heiss is.
What did you make of work say? What, like, what, your Brazilian colleague? What did they say?
I'll get him to record a voice note for you for the next podcast.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think he'll get some opportunities now, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
McAtee, on the other hand, Alex, you mentioned him before. He didn't have his best afternoon. Came off after an hour. He's in a funny position this season, isn't he?
Yeah, it's, as I said, it feels like sometimes he comes on or he starts and he's just a bit of hit and miss, isn't he? It seems this season for City, like he's had a few good performances, and then he's had some like against Plymouth where he didn't really make much of an impact. Made way sort of after the hour mark. So yeah, it's going into the summer. It's a bit of a strange one because he has sort of asked to go out on loan before. Obviously, he had that spell at Sheffield United. He wanted to go out again, but Guardiola wanted to keep him around. But he doesn't really look any closer, I wouldn't say, to, you know, getting regular minutes or being, if not regularly starting, being like a regular introduction from the bench. It doesn't really look like he's advanced his role at all this season, which, you know, looking at it from the perspective of it's been a tough year for City and there's been a lot of injuries, you perhaps would have thought he might have pushed on a little bit more. But then again, flip side of that, you could say such an unstable season, such a lot of turmoil, it's not exactly the ideal conditions for any young player to to, you know, take leaps and bounds forward. So it is a tricky position. I guess it depends. I feel like Guardiola would want to keep him around because he's clearly a very talented player. He provides that extra depth. Of course, he's an English player as well, so he helps.
Always helps.
With the quota sort of thing. But I feel like it'll come down to whether McAtee, what he thinks is best for his career now, because, you know, he's sort of in his early 20s, approaching the sort of the age where, you know, you need to be playing probably more regularly than he is if he really wants to reach the top level. So, and, you know, you can reach the top level away from Manchester City. Like, there's lots of other good clubs, top level clubs, where he probably play more than at City. So that's probably going to be one for him and his agent to think about what's best for him personally, because I've no doubt City would probably like to keep him around. But who knows if might not be the best for him, maybe. Yeah.
The senior players involved, because I'm not really sure where McAtee stands on that, because I think he's like closest to being a senior player, but it doesn't feel like he's quite in the group yet, Dan. You mentioned Grealish before and the stories around him this week. What do you make of his standard in the squad at the minute? What do you make of his performance and then just kind of like everything going on around him right now?
Yeah, I'm confused by the situation with Grealish, to be honest with you. Because you think he started the first leg against Real Madrid and went off injured. And it's like, if he's starting that game, if he's trusted to start that game, then Pep must rate him. He must have him in his plans and think that he can contribute something. And yet, was this his first start since that game? And I know he's been injured since then, but it's just like, he's in and out of the team. You don't really understand why. I don't think his performances this season have been outstanding, but I think they've been pretty consistently solid. Like, whenever he plays, I think we play better. And I think he does a decent job. He's still not chipping in with the goals and assists you would like to see. And I think overall his time at City has to be judged in terms of his price tag, you know, what we paid for him and what he's delivered for that price tag. And I don't think he's come close to really delivering it, aside from that one sort of second half of the season in the treble season. But I still rate him as a player, and I would still like to think that he has a future at City. You just have to wonder, is his lifestyle a problem for Pep? And I know Pep has sort of dug him out publicly in the past for getting injured, which, I don't know, is that a bit unfair? Other players get injured quite often and don't seem to get the same kind of public dressing down for that.
Is that a case of, though, Pep saying you're not giving yourself the best chance to get fit?
It must be. Yeah, that's all I can assume, that at some point there's been some kind of discussion or falling out behind the scenes, or just Pep being kind of turned off by hearing stories about him in the paper, going out on the piss and stuff like that. That must be it. There's no other real explanation for it, because I don't think his contribution on the pitch has been that bad that you think this guy isn't worth coming off the bench occasionally or starting games occasionally or just being part of the rotation. Obviously, there's other factors to come into it, that like Savinho has done well and has sort of deserved a run of the team. Doku has been in and out due to injury, and when he's played, he's contributed. And perhaps Doku offers more of a goal threat than Grealish does, and that comes into it sometimes. But I just think in terms of our overall problems with controlling games, Grealish always helps with that. And I always feel more confident when he's on the team sheet, and I just don't really understand why he's been sidelined so much. There must be more to the situation than meets the eye, than just pure form.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Another player whose future is far from certain, Alex, is Kevin De Bruyne. Contract up at the end of the season. We're now in March, and there's been no kind of stories either way. Goal in this game, assist, some decent attempts in there. What do you make of his standing at City? Because it feels like if it was going to continue beyond this season, we might have heard something by now.
Yeah, it's a weird one because he has started some bigger sort of, you know, inverted commas, bigger games this season, but it does feel like, you know, it did feel telling that he didn't play against Real Madrid in that second leg, you know, in the big sort of the really high pressure games where, you know, Guardiola's expecting transitions and really intense sort of contest. I think those days might be beyond De Bruyne now.
I think
Guardiola knows that, and I imagine De Bruyne sort of feels in his body that he perhaps can't hit those same levels. But then you see he's still a quality player with the ball at his feet. You know, he did some brilliant things against Plymouth. He's had some really standout performances this season, particularly with his delivery and you know, chance creation. So I guess I've seen reports and rumours that, you know, he's sort of warming to the idea of perhaps staying at City in a bit of a reduced role. But obviously that's just sort of rumours and nothing really confirmed or anything like that. So again, it was kind of like with what I said with McAtee. I feel like City, in an ideal world, Guardiola would like to keep him. You know, he's always very, at least in his press conferences, speaking to the media, he's always very complimentary of De Bruyne, says he can still offer a lot. But I think what we've seen from Guardiola's comments recently about perhaps older players in the squad and the need to sort of refresh, that, you know, he's not making any promises, basically, about De Bruyne playing. You know, if he stays, he's not making any promises about how much he might play next season. It's clear that the cycle is sort of coming to an end. So I guess it depends how happy De Bruyne is to stay and perhaps play a bit part role, but, you know, still be a part of what hopefully next season, from a City point of view, will be a very successful team again. And whether City think that can work from a financial perspective, given the wages that he currently earns at the club.
Yeah. I want to bring this in from David, who got in touch on Blue Sky, to say, why does everyone say the FA Cup is City's only chance to win silverware this season? There's also the Club World Cup. I'm not sure where that sits. Is it a major trophy? How seriously should City take it, and how seriously will they take it? Which are two slightly different questions. It is being taken much more seriously outside of Europe, for instance. Brazil is suspending its league for it, just like we did for the Qatar World Cup. City's owners have a more global outlook with the CFG. Can they really not take the chance to be world champions seriously? And this also comes in the context of the prize money that's been announced for this competition, which, frankly, Dan, is staggering.
Go on, what is it? I've not heard this story.
Well, there's a share of effectively $1 billion available based on how well you do in the competition, how far you get. Winners obviously get the biggest slice. But the prize money for advancing into the later stages is obscene. Any thoughts of PSR problems completely go away with the prize money from the Club World Cup.
Well, there's your answer then, David, on Blue Sky. That's how seriously they'll take it. Very seriously, I would imagine. I mean, well, the first question is, does the Club World Cup belong to this season or next season? Would it be tacked onto this season's achievements or next season's achievements? I don't know. That's by the by, isn't it, really?
It comes before the summer break, though, doesn't it? So it would have to be this season.
Does it?
When is it?
It's June, isn't it?
Because the PSR deadline is 30th of June.
I reckon it rather handily crosses over the PSR deadline.
Anyway, to answer the question, I think they will take it seriously, and I hope they do. I think there is some prestige here. I was a bit confused by City fans kind of turning their nose up at it last time we were in it, really, and saying it was a bit of a distraction or whatever. Because I think it does have a lot of prestige around the world, and Brazil is a great example. They are really big on it. And I think it's a real feather in our cap that we've won it. I'm not sure they should still be displaying it on the shirts at this point. It feels like that moment has kind of passed. It seems a bit cringe to do that now, personally. Especially, I know technically we've not had a Club World Cup since we won it, but we have had that Intercontinental Cup that Real Madrid won last year, which is the same tournament, changed the name into something else, and now they're doing this Club World Cup, so whatever. it could be a bit problematic for the preparations of next season due to the sort of timing of it and the fact that the season is going to start at the usual time and City won't have as much time to prepare. I'm sure it will hamper their pre-season preparations a little bit, but that's just something we have to get used to. We already have too many games. That's been a problem, you know, for a few years now, and especially this season, it's really caught up with City, so that's an issue. But I think with all that considered, it's an opportunity.
Midweek's off this season, though, so we're all right, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's an opportunity for City to win. I don't know if I would call it a major trophy, but I would call it something above a minor trophy at the same time, you know what I mean? It's not the Champions League, but it's not the Carabao Cup either. And I love the Carabao Cup.
I don't know enough about music to say this properly with any sort of distinction, but I'm going to say it and hope it's right. If it's not major and minor, it might be diminished.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, it's a musical term. Any musicians listening to this are probably now just like shouting at the phones about how terribly wrong I am, but there we are. Alex, how seriously should City take this? Because as Dan says there, there are a lot of games. They've obviously not got the squad and the players available. It might hamper the start of next season. But again, it's a trophy and that prize money.
Yeah, I think I agree with Dan that they should take it seriously, but I think you just have to weigh up how it's going to impact sort of the next season and preparations for the sort of the beginning of the new cycle. I think, you know, if there's players that perhaps really need like a rest or, you know, are coming back from injury, I don't think it would be worth Guardiola sort of risking them to play in the Club World Cup or play a major part. I think, yeah, it's an important trophy. I think it is more important than many English fans and English clubs kind of have treated it. So maybe that'll change with the new format, because obviously now it is more of a much bigger tournament sort of format, not in the middle of the season, which always felt like a bit of a distraction, I think, for Premier League clubs. But
it's
yeah,
in the middle
I don't
of the
think...
Brazilian season though, isn't it? That's the so it's in the middle of someone's season.
True, but they are actually having a proper break, as Dan said, for the Serie A. But yeah, I think it's. City should take it seriously, as every club should. But if it's, you know, it's not the Champions League, it's not the Premier League, so they shouldn't do anything that's going to be potentially detrimental to preparations for those competitions next season.
Yeah, I can tell you, I'm not planning to take it seriously from a podcast point of view because I want a summer break. So I'm not planning to. I'm not planning to be doing regular Blue Moon podcasts throughout the Club World Cup as well. But you know, we might change when we get to there and we see how we feel. I don't know.
Will you stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning to watch a game or whatever time there'll be?
Probably. I wasn't planning on it, but again, we're not there yet, are we? So. We'll
minus 500 Bertie points for you, David.
I'm going to lose even more Bertie points here because I was going to, before we move on, I was going to ask you the reaction to the FA Cup draw, because you look at the teams that are left in it, and obviously you would say on one hand, there is a great opportunity here for City to go on and win this competition because the traditional big boys are out. But then you look at every other team in that competition, and most of them you look at and you think, they've probably beaten City this season already. I'm kind of all right, Dan. If City go out, you know.
I'm not. I mean, I want us to win.
I want City out of the competition. I would prefer them to win it. But if City are not going to win it, at least it won't be Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea,
I know
United.
You know what I mean? There's not a lot of sort of mental pressure on it, is there really? It's just kind of I mean, I saw someone say on Twitter the other day, it's a must-win trophy for City this season. I was like, is it? Like, it's not the end of the world if they don't win the FA Cup, is it? And I find it a little bit sad that, you know, that when we won the FA Cup in 2011, like how much that meant to us and what a huge deal it was and a huge moment in our lives. And now the FA Cup is just seen as this sort of like secondary thing that, oh, if we win it, it'll just add a bit of gloss onto the season, but we've not had a good season. I find it a bit sad the way it's sort of been downgraded in our estimations, really. But yeah, I think it's a hard draw, Bournemouth away. I would have preferred something a little bit more straightforward, but you could say we've already had some pretty straightforward draws this season and we're due a test. Obviously, we lost to Bournemouth already this season and they're a good side. But when you look at kind of, you know, on paper, you would think that City are the best team left in the competition and should have the best chance of winning it. Obviously, the league table at the moment, Nottingham Forest are above us, so technically we're not the best team left in the competition.
Could change
this weekend, yeah. So yeah, I would like us to win it, but it's not the end of the world if we don't, would be my philosophy.
Yeah, Alex, Dan mentioned the game at Bournemouth already this season. So you talked about it earlier on. City are in a much better position now than they were when they went to Bournemouth last time. So like, it should be a better game, surely.
Yeah, I think it'll be you'd think City will put in a better performance than they did a few months ago. But then Bournemouth are a really good team, still a really good team. And Andoni Iraola's done a marvellous job with them. They're playing some really good football. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a tough one. I think it's possibly, maybe the toughest draw City could have got in the quarterfinals.
I didn't fancy Villa away or Brighton away, to be honest. To be honest, looking at this week, I didn't fancy Forest away either. So
yeah, true. But I just think it would be, from a neutral perspective, I think the FA Cup, I feel like it's not just the sort of the traditional, like, or in the last sort of 10 years, the big boys that win everything, where it's not just them that I think it's gone down in estimations. I think everyone kind of, or at least every Premier League club, sort of doesn't hold the FA Cup in the same sort of regard, I feel. But I do think it would be amazing, really, if Fulham have never won anything. And I only found this out the other day. They're like one of the oldest clubs and they've never won anything. I think it was, apart from City, or of the other seven quarterfinalists, I can't remember who it was, but the last FA Cup win from any of them was in the 80s, I think. There's so many fans that now are dreaming of having a winning something that has never happened in their lifetime before, which I guess is, going back to what you just said about 2011. That was the position City fans were in.
You know what, though? Suddenly, now you've said that, I really want City to win it. I want City to be the dream crushers, you know what I mean?
City are turning heel.
We've played that role quite well over the years, haven't we? Why give up the habit of a lifetime?
Yeah.
The biggest heel turn since John Cena the other day. I think it's going to be a really interesting game. And I think whoever wins is probably going to be the favourites to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting year for the FA Cup, given the teams that have already gone out.
Yeah. Let's start then with a look ahead to Forest with a view from the journalist and Forest fan Nick Miller. I started by asking whether he was expecting them to be so high up the table at this stage of the season.
No, I mean, at the start of the season, Forest got a lot of Forest fans got very kind of annoyed at the various like predictions that Forest would get relegated, which there were a few of, and they probably were a bit silly. I think a sort of realistic expectation of this team was, 14th, 15th, something like that. I was quite optimistic and thought, if everything breaks right and we don't get too many injuries and some of the new signings come off, then maybe we could sort of sneak in the top half. But yeah, to be third in March above City, only just above City now, but yeah, it's phenomenal. And it's kind of, very much in the kind of broken through the just enjoying it phase. I'm now.
Are you in the nervous stage now?
I'm now in the nervous stage because it is a bit sort of, when are we, is this our only chance? Is this, are we ever going to be able in this kind of position again where we might be able to get in the Champions League? There was a point where, like, when we played Liverpool, I forget when it was, about 6 weeks ago, I think it was, where if we beat Liverpool, then we would have only been a couple of points behind them, and people would have been genuinely talking like, oh, is Leicester kind of, is this another 2016? Can Forest actually win that? And I emotionally wouldn't be able to cope with that. I very much admire all you City fans that do this every year, most years. Because my God, I would have been, I simply would have dissolved at some points.
Yeah.
It's bad enough in the position that Forest are in, but yeah, never mind champions. Never mind winning the league.
Yeah, the thoughts that last season had no jeopardy. I mean, if somebody could have told me that when Heung-Min Son ran clean through in the 87th minute at Spurs, like my arse maybe wouldn't have fallen out of my body. But there we are. It's interesting because you look at what's behind Forest, and obviously this game is quite important for both teams for the Champions League for next season. But you look at that table: third Forest 48 points, fourth City 47 points, fifth Chelsea 46, sixth Newcastle 44, and then Bournemouth and Brighton in seventh and eighth on 43. I was going to say, like, it kind of feels, with 11 games left, it feels like you're pretty much there for some sort of European football next season. But actually, there's a lot of teams there that are really close together.
Yeah, it's a sort of, it's an odd situation in that I agree. I think it'll take some collapse from this point for us not to get. I don't know. I keep correcting. I'm sort of in journalist mode where I instinctively say yes, and then I keep correcting it. So, yeah, instinctively say us, but then I correct myself and say Forest. But I'm here as a Forest fan, so it's fine. It would take a bit of collapse from this point not for us not to be in some kind of European competition. I do fancy us for maybe fifth, which obviously is probably going to be Champions League this season. Partly because I would kind of fold Forest in with this as well. I don't trust any of the other teams to be consistent enough those teams to be consistent enough to really overtake us. Like, you know, City, I can't really get a handle on at the moment. It looks like it's getting better, but still ropey elements.
Capable of falling off, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Chelsea, don't trust them. Newcastle, don't trust them. Bournemouth are kind of much better than most people expected them to be, but they're still capable of kind of throwing a bit of a wobbler. They've had a bit of a ropey spell recently. Brighton, similar. And then, you know, the other kind of more traditional challenges are obviously way off it. So, yeah, at this point, pretty confident about getting some kind of European football and probably Champions League, which is, you know, obviously is incredible.
Yeah. So how does this weekend affect that then? Because obviously the game at the Etihad, I think, didn't really go as many people expected it to go, because I thought Forest were or would give City a bigger test than they did in that game in the end. Certainly the form City were in at the time, certainly the form Forest were in at the time. How does this one kind of go? Because obviously the two teams are the point separating them, both in the top four at the minute, both of them desperate to kind of take the lead in this race. And this one's on your patch. So how do you see it going?
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, I can't really make my mind up about this game, because Forest have been, it's the sort of the inevitable tail off, I suppose, from the unbelievable form we're in, you know, around Christmas time, January. But we're still kind of picking up results, going through just, you know, skin of the teeth in the FA Cup, drawing with Arsenal in truly one of the most turgid games you'll ever see. Beat Brighton 7-0, which was, you know, obviously unbelievable. But then kind of throwing in games like getting spanked by Bournemouth, and that's insane 10 minutes where we conceded four goals in 11 minutes, I think it was, against Newcastle, and then losing to Fulham as well. So they aren't anywhere near as good as they were, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months ago. But there's a little bit more solidity there in some of the performances, anyway, particularly the Arsenal game. I wouldn't expect much expansive football from Forest. I mean, you don't get much expansive football from Forest anyway, other than counter-attacks. But I suspect it will be 3/5 at the back and dig in, and then, you know, the old kind of Hope City sort of punch themselves out a little bit. And because, I mean, you know, Forest defence is weird, because the sort of success of this season has been built on it, but they've obviously had these few games recently where they conceded loads of goals, and it's all, you kind of worry, oh, is this the end? Is this this everything falling apart? But yeah, and I get, as I said just now, I can't quite get a handle on how good City are now. Obviously, it's, you know, it's not the doom times of a couple of months ago, and it looks a bit better. But I still wouldn't be particularly surprised if they don't beat Forest or even lose. So yeah, it's a funny one that I can't quite get my head around. To the point where I'm going to the game. I got offered a ticket, and I was kind of weighing up whether to go, which seems like an absurd, no-brainer decision, given that it's quite difficult to get tickets for Forest these days. But I was just, I just couldn't sort of weigh up my expectations for the game.
Yeah, that anxiety. I mean, it's interesting as well, because you talk about those spells and Forest's kind of strength being defence this season. Like, we've seen from City at times that when one goal goes in, another can go in, and you can kind of have that collapse. Has there been that sort of mental issue with Forest this season, or is it only in the last couple of weeks?
It's only in the last couple of weeks. It was an issue. There are a couple of issues from the last couple of seasons. One of them was conceding goals from set pieces, which they seem to have pretty much knocked on the head. And one of them was conceding goals in clusters, and it was usually only two. You'd kind of, you know, be too late on in the game. And that seemed to have been fixed until the last sort of month, few weeks. The Newcastle one, you know, four goals in 11 minutes was just as... It was so mad, it was like a bit of an aberration. There were a lot of very specific kind of tactical reasons, which is too boring to go into here, that why it happened. And
See, it's fine. I was like that with when City collapsed at Arsenal. I was like that as well. It's like, well, yeah, these sort of things happen, but I don't think it was quite a 5-1 game, and nobody wants to hear it. But
yeah, you know, yeah. Yeah, it's exactly that, really. And it was like, Forest took the lead and then had that mad 10 minutes, and then were really good in the second half, but still managed to lose 4-3. It was, you know, it was a weird one. So it really has kind of tightened up. There's, you know, people who've paid any attention to that will know why it's happened. It's Milenkovic, it's Murillo, Matt Sells is having a brilliant season. Ola Aina is having a brilliant season, apart from a couple of kind of aberrations. It is. It seems that one of the reasons that the kind of intrusive thoughts might have come in, and you thought, "Oh, is this where it's all going to collapse?" was that it looked like a lot of these old problems had been fixed, and then they just started kind of popping up like a little sort of burrow in your brain in the last few weeks, which sort of makes you think, "Ah, is this going to collapse?" But the Arsenal game was really kind of was encouraging, if not entertaining in any way at all, because this is partly Arsenal, and we know the problems that they've got with attackers, but it was that Forest defended so well in that game that you don't really see Arsenal scoring. I was never really that worried throughout the game, and it was a bit of a sort of irritation that Forest didn't then sort of capitalise on that and actually win the game.
City can be like that as well, though, at times this season. I mean, Haaland is Haaland and can score out of nothing at times, but if they can't get the ball to him, City can struggle up front.
Yeah, I'm worried about the kind of the slightly different attacking structure that City have now. Marmoush worries me, Haaland obviously, but one of the other things that one of the other reasons that I'm not really sure, but I can't quite make my mind up about City, is that there are these kind of lots of attacking elements, but it doesn't really feel like it's quite certain how they all fit together at the moment. Like, you know, Savinho is obviously better on the left wing, but Doku's there at the moment, and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. As I said, it's a kind of weird one to kind of arrange in my brain as to what I'm actually expecting from it.
Yeah, and just looking at the season as a whole going forward, obviously Champions League football would be wonderful, and it would be the ultimate aim, I guess, of the season from this point in to try and get that over the line. But just turning your attention to the FA Cup, quarter-final draw. It's maybe a bit of a tricky tie going away to Brighton, but look at everybody else who's in that draw. Could the FA Cup be a route to success for Forest this season as well?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of route one... topic for discussion. Would you rather win the FA Cup or finish in the Champions League places?
To which the answer is
both, please. There's a kind of an emotional thing with, I mean, Forest fans of a certain age as well, because it was famously the one thing that Brian Clough never won. And Forest have almost always been rubbish in the FA Cup. I think quarter final is certainly the furthest we've got since 1991. And I think, I can't remember, maybe only once or twice in that time. You know, obviously for a lot of that time, Forest have been absolutely awful. but there is a sort of, There is a not novelty value is probably the wrong phrase, but it there is a kind of what you sort of want from during lockdown. Forest almost got promoted from the Championship, but it was going to be, if we had got promoted from the Championship, we would have been in the playoffs, it would have been an empty stadium, no one would have been there, I wouldn't have been able to be there. So it sort of crystallised in my mind what I wanted from Forest these days, is that I want moments, I want like games that I'm there, ideally with my parents, who I've been going to games with since I was 6 or 7. And you, the winning games and doing well is great, but you want the moments. You want those sort of things.
The
that
rush,
you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want the rush. You want the games that you, the things that you remember for the rest of your life. And the Champions League will ultimately bring those, probably. But equally, that's in all likelihood, it's a lot of exciting trips to places where Forest would probably lose. Whereas if we win the FA Cup, that's the, you know, the final there is just one of those great moments, and you know, all wrapped up in the history of everything as well. So, sorry, I've introduced the boring either or question into a podcast that no one really cares where no one really care about it, but still, I mean, it's incredibly, obviously incredibly open. Forest in the quarterfinals. Technically, the highest ranked team left in the competition.
Yeah,
for a few days.
I looked at the draw when the draw was being made. My thought for City was get any of these teams at Wembley will probably be all right, but yeah. Get any of them away from home in the next round and we might struggle. And I was looking. Don't fancy going to Palace. Don't fancy going to Forest. Don't fancy going to Brighton. Don't fancy going to Bournemouth. Don't fancy going to Villa. Give us a home tie, and that's the best we can hope for. And then away at Bournemouth. So City could be out of the competition by the time you get to the semi final stage. So if you can beat Brighton, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always. I mean, this kind of comes back to the City game as well. In the first half of the season, Forest were incredible away from home. It's a counter attacking thing that everyone's you probably read a lot about, and the home form, which had previously been very strong, had fallen away a little bit, and now that's kind of flipped. They haven't won that many games away, and are looking pretty strong at home. So not being able to get a home draw in the cup was a blow, but because it's at home, there is the not unreasonable expectation that Forest might get something against City.
Yeah, so we've got the charity bet. Let's have a score prediction. I mean, we have just talked for 15 minutes about how it's the most unpredictable game in the world. So good luck.
whenever we've done this before, whenever I've talked about it, I have quite. Logically and reasonably predicted Forest will get beaten quite comfortably. So on this occasion, I am going to honour my family by predicting that Forest is going to win this one. I think Forest will win 2-1.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was the journalist and Forest fan, Nick Miller. Dan, let me just kind of dig into to what we were talking about there with Nick from a City point of view, because the table right now, in third, Forest 48 points. In fourth, City 47 points. Fifth, Chelsea 46. Sixth, Newcastle 44. Seventh, Bournemouth 43. Brighton 43. That's 5 points separating third to eighth. This is tight, isn't it?
It's more fun than the title race, this, isn't it? More interesting, definitely. I'm glad we're not in contention for the title this year and that it's over already. Yeah, it is. I mean, by that same token, I don't feel the same kind of pressure that we would feel going into this stage of the season. Were we in a title race where you kind of think we've got to win every game here because someone's breathing down our necks? I think there is opportunity for us to drop points in what the games that we have left and still probably finish quite comfortably in top four. I don't think getting top four is that difficult.
Yeah, something Nick said there, he doesn't trust even City, but Chelsea, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Brighton not to drop points.
Yeah, exactly.
So everybody's going to drop points in this run.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still fairly confident that we'll finish third, because I think if you look at the fixtures we have left, Forest is probably the most difficult one we've got left. And then on paper, obviously, you know, it doesn't always work out like that. And I'm sure there'll be some unexpected drop points along the way, but our running, I think, is fairly straightforward, and you would expect us to kind of win most of the games, even based on this season's form. So I think when it shakes out at the end of it, we'll have enough to be top three, maybe top four. Top two is still the dream for me. I still think that's not, you know, beyond the realms of possibility that we could somehow leapfrog Arsenal if they completely lose their minds or, you know, focus on the Champions League or something. But yeah, I'd take fourth at this stage, and I think we'll have enough to do it. It's not something that's sort of overly concerning me at the moment.
Yeah, and then, I mean, on top of that as well, Alex, it could all change, because look at the fixtures for this weekend. Forest and City play each other. Leicester in 19th play Chelsea. West Ham in 15th play Newcastle. Spurs in 13th play Bournemouth. All the kind of top four challenges there are away from home. Brighton are the only other one that's at home, and they play Fulham, who's 9th. So, like, you expect most of those should win the games, but then suddenly an unexpected victory somewhere for one of the other teams, and it's wide open again.
Yeah, it's so tight. But I do agree with Dan. I think City are probably in the best position to get that third spot. And then obviously it's just hard, isn't it? Because as Nick said, like, everyone looks like they're capable of dropping points. So I think City included in that, I hasten to add. So, but I do think City are probably, you know, there has been an upturn in their performances going out of the Champions League. You know, they haven't got that to sort of stretch them anymore. So I think City are probably in the best position. But yeah, I guess all City can do is just focus on winning their games and sort of let the madness happen around them, and, you know, I guess hope from their perspective that they're over that kind of hump that they had a few months ago, and that they can sort of see out the season a bit more smoothly and cruise to sort of fourth or third, or maybe even, if that, as Dan suggested, perhaps second.
Yeah, I also think fifth will be enough for the Champions League, given the coefficients, so it should be all right. Yeah. I mean, Alex, you mentioned the hump there from before Christmas. Can we take anything from the previous game between these two teams? Because while City were in the absolute depths of despair and just not winning, not putting any sort of performances together, they beat Forest 3-0. So it's like out of nowhere, they've just pulled this performance. So, like, can we take anything from that, or has it just been too inconsistent a season?
I think what you can take is that Forest are still a very good team, even though, you know, Forest aren't at the level perhaps that they were a few months ago. Obviously, when they lost that game to City, the weeks previously they'd lost to Arsenal and Newcastle, I think. And, you know, it's the same coming into this. They've played Newcastle and Arsenal recently. But I think, you know, that 3-0 scoreline perhaps flattered City a little bit. Forest had, you know, some really good chances. Stefan Ortega was calling to make some really good saves. I think Chris Wood had like a sort of a gilt-edged chance at 1-0 when City were winning, leading 1-0, that he put wide. And given
how
he
scored immediately after that as well.
Yeah, I think De Bruyne went up and scored at the other end. Yeah, but how Chris Wood's been this season, you would have put your house on him scoring that. So I think perhaps 3-0 slightly flattered City, but yeah, City are obviously in a better moment than they were then. They'd come off that seven game winless streak. And, you know, they've got a lot of players back. Okay, the defence is still a bit threadbare, but they've got other important players back. from injury. So I think City will probably go into this thinking, you know, they're in a great position to sort of win this, and Forest aren't quite where they were a few months ago. But I think what we can take from that game, even though City won, was, you know, that Forest are a really dangerous team, and they can play in a multitude of ways. They can play on the break. They can sort of, in other games, they've kind of had more of the ball. So they're going to be a really dangerous prospect, especially at the City ground, where, you know, those supporters create a really quite intimidating atmosphere when they get behind the team. So it'll definitely be a test for City, but one I think Guardiola will be sort of confident they can come through.
Yeah, since Forest have come back up, Dan, as well, City haven't had it easy at the City ground either. 1-1 in 22-23, where they, in fairness, probably should have won. But, you know, they struggled to get that one over the line. 2-0 win there last season, but it was only when Haaland came on that game suddenly started to feel a bit more comfortable towards the end. You can expect another tricky one, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I've been really impressed with Forest when I've seen them this season, actually. Really enjoyed watching them. But they are, as Alex said, like a very sort of streaky team, or a bit of a flaky team. That, what was it, they lost 5-0 to Bournemouth and then won 7-0 against Brighton within the space of a few days at the end of Jan. You just don't really know what you're going to get from them. They have
conceded three goals in 11 minutes at St James's recently as well.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But then they drew with Arsenal last week, they drew with Liverpool at home, I believe, so they've kind of got a bit of pedigree for coming up against the better teams and making it difficult. I'm expecting more of the same here. I think, you know, it's a Saturday lunchtime kickoff. I think their fans will be well up for it, and they'll, you know, that the opportunity is there for them now to finish in the top four, which it's one of those things that, a bit like, you know, Leicester's title a few years ago, where as the season goes on, you think, oh, they'll fall away. And then it gets to a point where it's like, they're not going to fall away, are they? Yeah. They're not going to fall away. And they're sort of on the home stretch of this now, and this is an opportunity for them to get a good win against a top four rival who obviously have had problems and are very fallible and able to be, you know, exploited, our weaknesses. So I'm expecting a tough game for City here, and I think we'll do well to come away with any kind of result.
Yeah, if City win, is that them in, that's them in control of this top four, and you would probably say it's kind of almost over the line, I guess, because they would still have Bournemouth and Brighton to play, both at the Etihad. It kind of feels like City are in full control from there on in.
I would say so, yeah. I think we've kind of hit some form at the right time, and obviously there's a discussion to be had about what kind of form City are in and how good it is at the moment. You know, the Spurs win was a good win, but there were moments in that game that were very sketchy and very, you know, it could have gone either way, that game, really. But, you know, we got the win, and that's kind of all that's important. There's been many times this season where we played quite well in parts of games and not got wins. I feel like we're in a bit of a good moment now where we've got a bit of a settled team. As we've said, the fixtures have evened out a little bit. We're having rest. We're not getting so many injuries, hopefully. Although, you know, Ake got injured the other day, didn't he? And he's out for the season now. So it's like, you know, you never know what can happen with this. But I feel like we're in that sort of calm state of mind now where we'll kind of get the job done. I don't know if that will start this weekend. It could be that we have a difficult game this weekend and we lose, and then it feels like we've taken one step forward, two steps back again. But once this game is out of the way, I would feel pretty confident about the fixtures that we have coming up, and I would feel pretty confident about our chances of getting the results we need.
Yeah, and Alex, from the Plymouth game, we kind of, I with the fact that Guardiola made 11 changes, I wonder if we kind of get an idea of who is going to be involved in this Champions League fight from now, because Kucinov wasn't involved at all. Haaland only came off the bench towards the end. Nico Gonzalez off the bench as well. De Bruyne played a full game. Maybe that tells you where everybody's at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. Kucinov has been really impressive. Just his sort of, he's obviously pretty decent on the ball, but his pure sort of defensive ability and you know, making those challenges, he's quite sort of Ruben Diaz-esque in the way that he puts his body on the line. We've seen that already in the short space of time he's been at the club. So I think he'll be playing most of the games in the sort of the running for the European places. Same with Haaland, obviously, that goes without saying. Nico Gonzalez, he's really impressed as well. So, yeah, and then with De Bruyne, as I said before, I think he's probably not at the minute in the sort of frame to play sort of every week. You know, his body just can't really deal with that. But, you know, he still has a lot to offer. So, you know, I imagine he will start some of these sort of games in the running. But, you know, he's not going to be playing every single one, or certainly not starting every single one. So I think, yeah, I think it probably does give you a bit of insight into who's going to be sort of key.
Key to this run, yeah. Well, we had a win on the charity bet on the last show. It was our guest Aaron Hocking from the Argyle Life podcast. He correctly predicted City's 3-1 win. And that means that our total for the season so far is now £1,225. That money's going to the Man City Fans Food Bank support group. We've got three £10 correct score singles from William Hill on City's games. And we're going to try and add to that total with our predictions from the Forest game. We've already heard that Nick Miller's gone for a 2-1 Forest win. That's 11-1 and £110. Dan, what are you having for this?
I fancy a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw, that is also 11-1 and £110 if you're right. Alex, over to you, what are you having?
I've gone for a 2-1 win to Manchester City.
So somebody's got to score two for us to win. 2-1 City is 7-1 and £70 if you're right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now, 35 years ago this week, Manchester City went to Nottingham Forest and were the victims of one of the most outrageous bits of cheating football has ever seen. You can talk all you want about 115 charges and allegations that City are currently facing, but Gary Crosby's blatant breaking of the rules in March 1990 left the travelling fans furious. Here is what happened. Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City on the 3rd of March 1990. Forest started the game 4th in Division 1, while City were 4th from bottom, 2 points above the relegation zone. With the score at 0-0 early in the second half, this happened.
And it's Crosby coming round the back, and Dibble got it at the second attempt. Oh, and Crosby's pinched the... Oh, has he given the goal? He has! My word! Gary Crosby! And Dibble is livid! And Manchester City have surrounded the referee, Roger Gibbon. Dibble had the ball resting on the palm of his right hand, but that, Gary Crosby realised, wasn't a full control of the ball.
That's Martin Tyler describing the moment that Forest winger Gary Crosby headed the ball out of Andy Dibble's hand before going on to score. The referee wasn't looking and the goal was allowed to stand. City's manager, Howard Kendall, was furious in his post-match interview.
I mean, I can't believe it. Was it George Best that knocked a ball out of Gordon Banks' hand about 25 years ago and that was disallowed? Have we not improved since then?
I suppose the referee might have thought he wasn't in full control of the ball.
What, with the ball in his hand?
In one hand.
Oh, dear me, I mean, the ball is in the keeper's hands. And I mean, there's no way that that is a goal.
This all centres around a misunderstanding that still exists to this day. According to the laws of the game, a goalkeeper doesn't need to have two hands on the ball to be in full control of it. They can have it pressed against their body, pressed against the floor, or resting in the palm of their hand. We asked Dibble about this on the podcast recently.
I suppose it created history because when you see the rule changes now, I mean, if that would have been today, they'd been off the field, I think, for ungentlemanly conduct. I felt really hard done by... Listen, you can never get away from it. Even now, go on holiday, you can turn up in a sports bar and it'll be shown over and over again. So it'll never go away. But it did set a precedent. The goalkeepers then checked behind them, didn't they? You can see the funny side of it later on, but at the time, it wasn't a nice feeling, you know what I mean? Especially when you come off and the feeling of, well, just so angry and upset after, and ultimately it cost us the game.
Dibble told us he never got an answer about why the referee allowed it.
Roger Gifford's a Welshman, I'll never forget him. He's a lovely man. And during my time at Cardiff City, as you know, we had a great time. We got in the Premier League. Roger became an assessor and I always used to try and have a laugh and a joke about it, but he was always reluctant to talk about it. And the number of times I approached him, didn't want to talk about it. And oh, he always smiled. And I said, Roger, that cost me my place at Manchester City, that goal.
This was a match that featured on one of our City Heaven, City Hell nostalgia episodes a couple of years ago. Jonathan Smith picked it as his hell choice, and he was in the away end.
I was probably, what would I have been, 14? Not particularly tall. And so when you're that short, it's one of those grounds where you couldn't quite see the goal. You sort of saw the top half of the net and you got a vague idea of when the ball had gone in because everyone jumped up around you and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, three sides of the ground just erupted into noise. And I had no idea what was going on. Absolutely furious, and still am, that I went all the way to Nottingham to see a goal that should never have been allowed and I didn't even see it. And then to then have the arguments with people afterwards It shouldn't have stood.
Meanwhile, journalist and Forest supporter Nick Miller was among the home fans.
This is one of my kind of great sporting I was there moments because it was just so stupid. I was quite young at the time, so I don't remember much of the debate around it. I just remember being kind of very amused by the whole thing in the ground. And that sort of Martin Tyler commentary sums it up quite nicely because he sort of chuckles as if, you know, Gary Crosby has done this cheeky little impish thing. And of course, the referee is going to call this back in a minute. But then, oh no, hang on. No, he was given the goal. Oh my God, he's given the goal.
It was after this incident that the laws of the game were clarified. In the years that followed, it became the thing that Andy Dibble was remembered for, despite a good career in England and Scotland.
It's interesting, really, because you can go to Wembley and win the... Sorry, I didn't win the cup for Luton Town. I made a penalty save at the tunnel end, which gave Luton Town and its fantastic support. Such a great day out to win the Littlewoods Cup on that day. You know, and I played a pivotal part in it, as did many others. So, it does become difficult because you can make a save in a major cup final and people always remember the negative side. But as you get older, you learn to deal with it.
After this match, City went on a 9-game unbeaten run, earning 19 points in their fight for survival. Forest, meanwhile, had a reversal in fortunes, failing to win any of their next 8. Both teams finished the season in mid-table in Division 1.
Hi, I'm Andy Dibble. You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
Dan, you were laughing there. We're slightly too young to like to have been impacted by this, but I remember doing soccer schools at City with like coaches, like when you know when they like in the half term holidays they'd have those soccer schools, and me and one other there was another lad there who was a goalkeeper, and Alex Williams took us to one side and did some like goalkeeper training with us, and even then in about 1998, 1999 or so, he was saying as soon as the ball is loose, get it in two hands. Always, they can't take it off you in two hands. That's the lasting impact of this moment.
That little speech you went on there of the goalkeepers' union put you up to that.
Yes. Yeah, because the laws of the game say you can have it in one hand as long as you've got full control of it. You can have it in one hand. It doesn't. Yeah. You can't take it.
Well, yeah, there was a miscarriage of justice. Then what? You know, can we re-referee the game or something? Replay the game at this point? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm still, you know, bitter about Alan Wilkie's phantom penalty at Old Trafford in 1996. Yeah. So I can understand why you're not over something that happened while you were 3 years old or whatever it was. But,
yeah, wasn't even three by this point. I was only just two. There we are. But that's the lasting impression it's had. Yeah. We'll do some more stuff like that on the podcast. Now we've got midweeks, we can dive into a few more nostalgia moments like that. But that's Gary Crosby stealing the ball from Andy Dibble.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Alex, this is your first time since we've been doing this, so pick a number, 1, 2, or 3.
2.
Number 2, let's go.
The listeners' questions, the listeners' questions. The listeners' questions, the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions bit, so please make sure that yours ain't shit, because Mooney won't put up with it. It's the listeners' questions. The listeners' questions, the listeners' questions. Ah, thank you.
What I like about this bit now is when people come back on the show, because we now record on a platform that has video on it, and we can all see each other, it's the complete look of mystification on the guest's face that as soon as they hear Higgy's voice there. But yeah,
you should put the reactions on social media of people hearing it for the first time.
I don't record the video though, unfortunately, but there we are. Get in touch on Blue Sky, look for Blue Moon Podcast there. You can contact us on the email as well, contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. You can fill in the form on the website, plenty of ways to get in touch. Andrew's been in touch on emails to say, I heard on Big Steve's live stream that he's been contacted by the BBC and ITV to go on when the result of the charges is announced and that they've been briefed about a decision. Isn't it a bit fishy that this is happening and isn't confidential? I thought the hearing was a secret. Can we read anything into the media lining up City fans for the announcement? I feel like we should clarify a few things here because obviously I've been back and had a listen to Big Steve's live stream and he's and what he said about it. As far as I can tell, what it seems to be is the BBC and ITV and various media outlets, we all know that a decision is coming soon. When they say briefed, I think what they mean is that it's a briefing discussion between the BBC or ITV in this case and Big Steve about whether he would be available to comment at the moment that the charges drop. I don't think, just to put everybody's mind at rest, I don't think this is anybody from the Independent Commission leaking any sort of result to any sort of media organisation. Dan, when you think about what you do for a living as well, I mean, I'm guessing there's probably kind of plans in place for when the announcement is made. Like, things can be written beforehand.
Yeah.
But you just kind of, like, do the background stuff, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we've written 2 articles already, basically, for either outcome. Obviously, we don't know what the actual outcome is, but a sort of positive one for City and a kind of negative one, because you have to have these things ready. It's the same, sadly, with, like, obituaries, you know. Yeah. How do you think they get the obituaries up so quickly when people die? Because they've had them written years in advance in most cases. So, yeah, media has to prepare for these things. I personally would love to know when the hearing is going to be, when the result is going to be announced, because I would like to book a day off work so I can just drink through it, whatever the result is, basically, and just sort of switch off from it. Not everybody in the media has that same liberty, unfortunately. But, you know, you've got a bit of insight into this, haven't you, Mooney? You've been invited on to the BBC already, basically. All lined up for it.
Yeah, I'll most likely be on 5 Live when the result is published. I've said if I'm available then they can call me and I'll be on. But let me give a bit of an idea about the process on the podcast, because my other job away from making stuff about City is producing news at 5 Live. So hopefully I'm a freelancer with them, so hopefully I can give a little bit of insight into how the nuts and bolts of something like this is put together. Because I've also posted about this on the Blue Moon Forum, because I saw some people getting a bit potentially the wrong end of the stick about what's happened too. So, like, on a day-to-day basis, for any normal working day, we book guests ad hoc for news programmes. So we decide the stories that we're going to cover, and then we spend the kind of lead-up time to the programme, finding guests, doing a pre-interview with them, finding experts to get them on, see their availability. And get them on to talk about whatever the stories of the day are. There are some stories, though, that we know are going to happen. I always use the budget for this as an example. It's not quite the same with the charges, because we do get a little bit of a steer on the budget about what's going to be in the budget. But in the days before the budget, you can phone financial experts, get them on and say, you know, when the budget's happened, are you available to come on and react to it? And I think that's what's happened here. Guests are quite often booked kind of programme to programme as well. So people think of the BBC as this one massive organisation, but actually there's lots of subdivisions and sub-bits of it. And even when you take something like 5 Live as a network, the breakfast production team don't really liaise that much with the drive production team, who don't really liaise that much with the afternoons team and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot there is crossover, and guests do get kind of moved from one program to another, but it's on each individual team to check that if you're going after a guest to come on your program, it's for you to check that they haven't already been on the network already for breakfast. If I'm working on drive, for instance, and we're doing a similar story or the same story later in the day, I have to make sure my guest guests are different to the ones that have appeared on Breakfast earlier in the day. There is one, or there is a wider production team that works on stories for the network as a whole and then arranges what programmes those stories will go into. I'm not sure entirely on the logistics, but I think they're the team that's looking after the City Charges story. And all this means is that they're putting plans in place for who they're going to speak to when the verdict is published. And I also think what could get a bit confusing here, because I went back and listened to Big Steve's stream, I think what could get confusing is the word brief, because we often use the word brief in a way that it doesn't necessarily mean what people would think it means. We often call a pre-interview with guests. That's where we get their opinions and their thoughts about what they're going to say when they're on the radio. When we speak to them beforehand in that, we call it a briefing chat, meaning that we are taking a brief from the guest to get their thoughts. I don't know what's in the email to Big Steve. That could have been what's been said. And also, what also may have been said is that the production staff have been briefed to expect a verdict soon. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's come from outside the organisation. It could simply be editors and production staff kind of being told, listen, we are expecting a verdict soon from bosses, people at the top. We're expecting a verdict soon. We need to be ready for when that verdict drops. It doesn't mean it's come from the commission. It doesn't mean that it's come from City or anyway. It could simply be that the production team have been told, you know, you need to be ready for when this story breaks, because it is going to break sometime soon. And, you know, imminent is another word that Steve used on his stream and was apparently in the email. Like, imminent could mean any time between now and the summer. We know it's going to happen sometime soon. We also know from previous things that have been said, the timescale. The verdict was expected in the spring anyway. It's now the spring, so obviously the BBC are putting plans in place for what will be on air. And in many ways, this is a good story to do, because the guests, come what may, whether City are found guilty or whether they're found not guilty, the guests are the same. Everyone's just going to be reacting to the verdict. If you're a financial expert, if you're an ex-player, if you're a fan, whether you're a fan of City or an opposition fan, doesn't matter. You are all reacting to what the verdict is. So it's basically, are you available when it drops? Can we give you a call? Yes or no? Oh, what on any weekday, when's the best time to give you a call? If it drops in the morning, are you available? I'm not available till after 2, all that sort of thing. It's probably just logistics. It is important to stress as well, as far as I'm aware, nobody knows the outcome. Not the Premier League, not City, not any media organisations. And also, as far as I'm aware, there's been no leaks of the verdict either. So I'm not 100% on the legal issues around it. But I'm fairly sure if it had been leaked, if somebody had the verdict, then it would have been reported. I can't think of any reason it would be in contempt of court. It wasn't a court proceedings, it was a private hearing. Any issues like that. I can't think of any reason that would make having that leak unreportable. So what I think's happened is the BBC and ITV have contacted Big Steve to check his availability, you know, if he can appear on the programmes when the verdict's announced, and that is it. No knowledge, no steer on the outcome, nothing like that, nothing to read into whether it's good or bad for the club. I think it's just a check of his availability. I don't want people to start worrying unnecessarily about it.
If I remember rightly, with the UEFA cast decision, there was a bit of lead time for that, wasn't there? They sort of said, it's going to be announced a few days before on this day.
I can't remember. I remember...
Because I remember specifically on the day, I knew it was going to happen on a specific day, and it was 10 a.m. this day, and we knew that for a week or so before or something. So I'd hope it would be the same sort of thing this time to kind of mentally prepare for it,
ready.
Nothing else. Yeah,
and I also remember with the CAS one, I don't know whether this will be the case for this verdict, but I remember from the CAS one, didn't both UEFA and City find out an hour before? Were they not
probably
given an embargoed copy, and then...
It
basically gave them time to get their statements ready. That I don't know whether that will happen this time or not.
Yeah. I woke up at 5 a.m. that day and couldn't get back to sleep, just nervous about it, basically. It's not even football, is it? The things this stupid sport does to you.
Yeah. That was Sean Gotter on the day of the playoff final. Woke up really early, couldn't get back to sleep. Anyway, final question for this week.
Well, so.
Yeah. Final question for this episode comes from John on the emails, who says, with the additions of the January signings, how confident are you that City will be back to challenging for major honours next season? Does much more need to be done in the summer? If so, which areas need to be strengthened? Alex, what do you reckon? Are you feeling confident that this season just a minor blip and that that Guardiola's there and able to do it for next season, or do they still need to tweak the squad somewhat?
I think there still needs to be additions in the summer. I don't know if this season counts as a minor blip or a major blip for City. I guess in the context of previous seasons and the sort of dynasty that they built, you could probably say it's a pretty major blip.
But say in the context of City's entire history, that was quite a minor blip, isn't it?
True, that is true, yeah. Yeah, City fans would tell you that's, it's just sort of, they're not even anywhere close to sort of going back to the mean, really, are they? I think the January additions will help. Clearly, some of them, like Kusunov and Vitor Reich, are signings for the future. They're not necessarily, although Kusunov has impressed, he's still very raw. But I think they still need, they might have to sort of do some more sort of signings in defence, because it's looking pretty clear that, a lot of the centre-backs just can't stay fit. And this summer might be the time where some of them are sort of phased out and new blood is brought in, maybe.
Yeah, would you, on that, like if you think about the volume of games and Guardiola's expressed recently that he might need a bigger squad going forward, would you be, given like they have a lot of centre-backs already, as you say, most of them can't stay fit at the moment, but would you be considering actually keeping most of them around and bringing more in? Just to kind of inflate the squad numbers. I don't know. If you've got John Stones, who might only be able to play 10 or 15 games in a season because of fitness, that's 10 or 15 games there from Stones. Whereas if you were to move him on and bring a replacement in, you might be asking that replacement to do 45, 50.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I guess Guardiola's reservation would be that he has always preferred to work with small squads. And obviously that hasn't worked this season. So then, but next season, once you've had the summer reset, or at least a bit of a reset after the Club World Cup, a bit of rest, people come back fit and healthy. Is he going to want such, an even bigger, like even more centre-backs than he's already got? And then plus new arrivals potentially in the summer. Is he going to want that sort of headache about keeping everyone happy, keeping the sort of squad morale high? I feel like he probably won't. And I just wonder as well from a point of view of registering players for the different competitions, the restrictions on that, are you going to be able to have a much bigger squad, really? Mm-hmm. Especially defenders, like people are going to miss out. It's obviously already Vitor Reich isn't in the Champions League squad. But yeah, I think, midfield as well, they probably need another midfielder. It's been pretty clear that Ilkay Gundogan isn't the player he was. Mateo Kovacic has had sort of a difficult year. De Bruyne, obviously.
Bernardo's dropped off a bit this season as well.
Bernardo, yeah. Which I think with Bernardo, it's partly, the same as a lot of players kind of age, perhaps slightly past his best, but also I think he's been one of the biggest victims of the sort of system falling apart without Rodri. He's been asked to do so much and sort of spread himself so thinly that he's kind of not doing anything as well as he used to. And then I think really the attacking front line is probably the area that's sort of perhaps going to see the least sort of work on it in the summer. Obviously, Omar Marmoush came in and he's looked quite encouraging, his performances. I think midfield and defence is probably going to still have some additions in the summer.
Yeah, Dan, you were saying before, I hope it was you, and I'm not just misremembering this, about ripping the Band-Aid off and getting the sticking plaster out and actually doing the changes. What do you see happening in the summer?
That wasn't my analogy, I'm afraid. But
was it not? There we are.
But it's a good one, so I'll claim it now. Yeah. in the summer, yeah, I think I agree with Alex. I think a midfielder is needed, and I think it has to be a big signing. I think it has to be someone who could be a really influential player, not just a kind of squad player, not like a Mateus Nunez level player, who I think is a bit unfairly maligned at times, but has just not had that kind of impact. I think we need a De Bruyne replacement, and I wouldn't be against, going back to what we were saying earlier, having De Bruyne around a little bit longer as a real bit part player that other players can learn from and be sort of an influence in the dressing room. But I would like to see someone like Florian Wirtz from Leverkusen come in, which has been talked about. I think he's going to cost a hell of a lot of money, probably over 100 million euros.
Yeah, but if they win the Club World Cup.
There you go. It's chump change, isn't it, basically, yeah. So I would like to see someone like that come in. I would like to see at least one fullback come in, and I think that's necessary. And I think in terms of the question about how confident I am that City will be back challenging for major honours next season, I think we have every reason to be confident about that. I think we can put this season down to being a minor blip that they will learn lessons from. You know, Pep has spoken recently about how as an organisation they've learned a lot this season, and we'll try and, you know, make sure the same mistakes aren't repeated again. And I think you do learn a lot from setbacks, a lot more from setbacks than you learn from successes sometimes. But at the same time, you just never know in football. That could be the end of an era, really. You know, I would trust Pep to adapt to the way that the game is changing in the Premier League and to come up with solutions next season. But I would have imagined that, you know, United fans in 2014 would have expected their team to just bounce back from a bad season. Arsenal fans in the early 2000s wouldn't have expected that it would be 20 years before they were challenging for a title again. Liverpool fans in the early 90s, likewise. You know, these things, football does go in cycles, and these cycles do end eventually. And a part of me does wonder whether City's time at the top is over. And that's not even factoring in the charges and what that could mean, you know, the outcome of that. So there's a lot of questions, I think, but I feel confident and comfortable that we are in a good position as a club, that we have a good structure for the future, and that we will come back strong next season, but we'll see.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting to be on such a worrisome note to finish the show, but there we are. That's it for today's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much to my guests for this one. Alex Brotherton.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And Dan Burke.
Don't worry, be happy.
There's a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up. It's a reflection on City's title running from 2018, where Pep Guardiola's side became the first to win the title back-to-back in a decade. We hear from fans of all the clubs that City played in that run-in. The full thing is now available on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week reviewing the game with Forest and looking ahead to the match with Brighton. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It kind of felt a little bit unbelievable that Newcastle had a chance to win the game. The penalty took an age to take, and then he took a really bad penalty that the keeper should have saved. Just a great feeling in there. Even talking about it with you now makes me quite envious for a different pre-VAR era of football.
I certainly can't stand there screaming for Everton to go on this and win this game, given the fact that where my particular seat is at Goodison as well, I can look over and see Anfield as well. So there's something poetic about that as well, which I thought I really can't be doing with this. So I did give me tickets to a friend on that game.
I know Matt Lawton does his best, and I liked Matt Lawton, still do, but he gets his chest on it, and that should be enough. But I get it, he's running backwards, the ball's going backwards, the momentum then takes it over the line. But I just think if you just stick your chest out with a bit more oomph, it doesn't then go backwards.
It's just been an absolute thunderstrike that we could have been, you could have faced any team in the Premier League, any team in Europe, and that is still going in that position. There isn't a goalkeeper that's stopping that.
Seeing City, I think, was a bit of an eye-opener. You know, Sergio Aguero and all of the absolutely unbelievable players you had in that team. So we wanted to sort of just watch them lift the trophy, because we thought, well, it's a piece of history here.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage.
Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.